Who are these kids?
Your request is denied, Vice Admiral.
So science-y.
Get it done.
Maybe you just weren't sagacious enough to notice.
Yes. Hello and good evening on this Thursday, November 24th, 2022. We just finished watching Star Trek Prodigy Season 1, Episode 15, Masquerade. Masquerade. But we're just getting started here on Live Long and Podcast for our breakdown review, a live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and on Twitch. Or you might be listening to us later on in the audio version or, you know, into the future. This episode has released. I'm Dave Mader, and I'm joined tonight with the crew once again to break down this episode, talk about it, and share our thoughts and speculate on where we're going from here. We got Davin Skelhorn with us tonight on a new laptop. How's it going tonight, Davin?
I think I need new earphones now. I'm getting a crackle from your audio. I'm a bit sagacious.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm a bit priscapacious. And Jessica Chan also with us tonight, of course. And how are you doing tonight?
I don't know what any of those words mean. I'm with O'Connor. What's
with
going
Gwen?
On? No idea.
Wow, I never heard you use such big words.
Yes. We had O'Connor, more O'Connor in this episode. Jellicoe, guys, was back. Ronnie Cox himself. Given orders, you know, a vice admiral pretty high up in the ranks, but they're still, you know, full on admiral. And Jellicoe ranks her, much like he outranked Commander Riker back on the two-parter that he appeared in, Chain of Command in Star Trek The Next Generation, way back in like 1992, probably, or something like that. So, it's been quite a long time. Ronnie Cox back voicing the role, another legacy character in this episode. Couldn't be happier to have him in the.
You didn't name him though, did they?
No, they don't. They don't.
She just calls him Admiral.
She just calls him Admiral. But yeah, so it's one of those things where, like, yeah, it's not necessarily important his backstory, I guess, in the what he's appeared in previously. But let's go, Jessica. You first. What did you think of this episode?
It was good. I didn't really expect the answers about Dal as quickly as we did. I thought they were going to drag that on a lot longer than so. I was surprised that we actually got like some solid answers this episode. And and then yet another little introduction nod that I thought was neat was the Soong, Dr. Soong, or I guess their protege is coming in.
Yeah, another Soong knockoff Soong. Relative adjacent type of character. Yeah, absolutely. I was like, oh, of course, it's according to the Soongs. Davin and Kat.
Kitty.
What did you think of this episode?
I think it's probably my favorite of the series, probably by a pretty significant margin.
Okay, and what in particular did you enjoy about it?
Well, Jellicoe's doing some classic Jellicoeing. Like, he was just straight up Jellicoeing Janeway.
He's like a Jellica cat, or was it in Cats? Is it Jellicoe Cats? In the Jellicoe? Broadway musical Cats? Is it a Jellicoe cat? A Jellicoe cat.
Something, you know? Like, yeah, I think so.
As like Jessica said, it stopped a bunch of things really from dragging out, I thought. There was a lot in this episode.
Absolutely.
Big twist at the end.
What's the twist?
Everything.
At the
end? Like, we get a bunch of the Dal thing. I thought was super interesting.
Yeah, and did you like what they did with it in terms of character development and how they played it out in this particular story?
I do. I like that whole thing. I've never liked Dal more in this episode because Dal doesn't always do it for me. But he was really good in this, I thought.
Yeah, I agree. O'Connor, you know, he showed his true colors.
He was good too.
Yeah, he was
way better than last episode.
Yeah, because they kind of just showed this guy for, like, he's just an opportunist and not really a good bloke at all and not somebody you should care for. And, get on out
too
of here.
Too good to be true.
Too good to be true. If it's something too good to be true, it probably is. That turns out to be O'Connor. Really, because Janeway hologram gives that warning to Dal on the way out. There was great character development. Yeah, and let's we should get into the rock talk of it all.
This is rock talk.
Right. Let's walk through this episode. Masquerade, written by Nikhil S. Jayaram, who also wrote Time Amok last season or this season, which was a rock talk featured episode. Anyway, so, and directed by Sung Shin, who's been directing a bunch of these and co-directing a bunch of these. And we start off with a captain's log from Dal, who says Stardate, who knows? They are on the run on the other side of the neutral zone, where we left them in the last episode. You know, and Okana is everybody's favorite new guy in this episode. He's putting out the fire here on Jank and Pog. We also see Murph is settling into his new body. Did everyone enjoy the Murph new role here?
They needed a security officer.
They did need a security.
Rock there was Talk the needs job. To focus on all the sciences.
Yeah, Rock Talk is officially out of like the obligation of security officer that can be deferred to Murph, apparently, who's running around with phasers, a little careless. Safety training. They end up putting Murph into this hamster ball for a lot of the episode. I don't know if I necessarily needed that part, but and I hope it's not a permanent thing, I guess is the other was my other reaction here. But it was cute and everything. There was also this whole thing where, you know, he's getting jealous. You know, Gwyn and Rock Talk in particular, and maybe a bit Zero, like Okana, a little bit too much. In particular, Gwyn, I think that, you know, they're always trying to, I think they're pushing the romantic thing with Gwyn and Dal long term. It feels like that to me. Just saying. And he imagines here, Okana just carelessly puts his hand on this panel near the airlock and gets sucked out into space, you know, but not Gwyn. She's not sucked out into space. She's for some reason, you know, so she just holds on and says, you know, close the door. But then it turns out to be all a dream where Gwyn's waking him up here. Did you guys like that part, Jessica?
Yeah, for a second, and they've never really done anything like that. So I was like, whoa, what the? Are they going to get him? Is he going to die? Like, oh, wait, no, it's a dream. Like, they've never really done a little.
Is it that's how they killed him off? He was just part of the montage. Like, and then, like, he was, it would be really dark. They were like, this kid show killed off Okana in the most cavalier way. And so they also mentioned that Janeway is on the fritz here. Did they show that? I think I have a screenshot. Yeah, you see like her holograms malfunctioning. They need to get repairs and supplies. So even though they're on the run, there's a lot of this urgency. There's also this kind of time for this side away mission to kind of like, you know, get things going because they're not imminently facing the Romulans or the Federation. They're kind of cut off from both. So Okana knows the way. And Okana's eating an apple through this scene. And if you know anything about Star Trek, the motion 2009 version, they gave like Kirk this apple, like Chris Pine playing him eating the apples at the Kobayashi Maru, and you know, they said like jerks in the commentary, in the DVD commentary, they were like, if you're eating an apple in a scene, you just come across like a dick, you know, you're just like you're completely cocky, you think you know everything, you know, because you have time to eat and explain things and whatever and do your business and maybe even throw your feet up here on the captain's chair, you know. So
a little disrespectful there.
A little disrespectful. Dal's not liking it. You know, get out of my chair.
No. How do I sound now, Murphy? Murphy's correcting my audio off screen.
Yeah, you sounded a little hollow actually, but you're sounding better.
Yeah, now. It was my laptop mic. I forgot to select this one. Does it sound better now?
I'd say you sound better now.
It's an interesting like look into Dal, I guess, as like I think he's been a little with the captain's thing being a little, I guess, kind of you just kind of took it because he didn't want to answer to anybody, but it seems like it bugs him that someone is able to lead a little easier than he is. So it seems like maybe he's starting to take this a bit more seriously than he was. So
Yeah, like I feel like they have really grown his character in these 15 episodes. I feel like we really know him, and we're getting to know him more, and there's more being revealed here. But yeah, like how to become a leader, I think, is part of his arc, certainly. And as all of these characters sort of have the roles they're settling into slowly, and they're getting to, and how they want to explain all that, right? So it's nice. I think it's working in the storyline, in the performances. There's a good chemistry, I think, in this crew.
Look at those gorgeous Dideridecs.
I know, they look pretty good, eh? Looking at each other from across the neutral zone.
I love it.
My only question about Dal in this episode was, like, he was raised by a grifting Ferengi. How did he not see through O'Connor? Like, they're pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Right? Well, he should have seen right through this guy, is what I feel like, because he grew up with someone like that.
True. Yeah, that should be part of his skill set, and they kind of overlooked that part. But yeah, here we get these, look at these Romulan warbirds.
So, Captain, how long shall we stare at each other across the neutral zone?
Well, as long as it takes, I guess. You know, we see the ready room here, I guess, of on the Dauntless of Janeway and Janeway here. We, you can also see over here in the corner, the USS Voyager.
Good model on
her desk. Very cool little thing. Somebody pointed that out in the trivia section. You know, with the Romulan warbird looking right at her, and she's talking to an admiral, who you know. Oh, sorry. We knew it was going to be on this.
How often do Deridexes travel in twos?
Or three sometimes,
yeah. It used to happen a lot on TNG, too.
Romulans like to surround you three ways, like in the Enterprise incident. It kind of set the precedent, you know? Ronnie Cox back here at Jellico. He's here. You know, he has this long conversation here with Janeway. Two characters who never met previously. Huh? What's that?
Four Pip Admiral. Jellicle.
He's a four pip admiral. He's, you know, and he makes that point to her, you know, by rank.
Your request is denied, Vice Admiral.
Vice Admiral. I'm an admiral. You're a Vice Admiral. Yikes. And I have one more pip than you. That's the, you know, point. I pulled some of Jellicoe's greatest quotes, you know.
Get it done.
Remember when I was.
Get that fish out of the ready room.
What's that?
Three pip admiral. I'm not like that anymore, Catherine. So you gotta listen to me. Yeah. Old Jellicoe.
Oh, Jellicoe, you know.
We're not on a research mission. Get it done in 2 days.
Done.
Get it done. He was not make it so. Jessica, what was your...
you think he made Janeway wait 15 minutes before he talked to her?
Yeah, maybe, you know. Is there a problem, Vice Admiral?
Is there a problem with Delta Shift, Will?
Is there not a Delta Shift yet? Jessica, what was your reaction to seeing Jellicoe in this?
I didn't even catch who that was or the reference, so I'm terrible. I'm so bad with trivia. I rely on you for that stuff, Dave. So, but okay, I like that they pick up, you know, they don't just create new characters or whatever. I do enjoy that they kind of try to pepper these like legacy characters throughout the show. And I imagine it makes writing kind of easier. You don't have to come up with a backstory or worry about like messing up any kind of continuity. They're like, just pick someone from the show. And then that way we know their backstory already. It's already dealt with.
Yeah, no, it's true.
It'll be more fun for them too.
Yeah.
Like if you're going to play in the sandbox.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they're back in like the alpha beta quadrant now, so they can do a lot more of that rather than just show us a Kazon.
Yeah. Now they're closer to the Federation and the rest of like the core like Earth and everything else. More to go on. Question here from
there, Sam.
Do we think we'll see any more Voyager? I think we're going to see more. I think we're going to continue to see more characters from Next Generation Voyager Deep Space Nine era. I think it was interesting bringing Ronnie Cox's Jellicoe here with Kate Mulgrew's Janeway, two characters who are contemporaries of each other in like the Star Trek timeline, but have not been used in the same story ever before. You know, and I wonder how much more they can build upon that. Do you think that Davin's looking off screen or he's frozen there?
He might be frozen.
Ultimately, Ultimately, Ronnie Cox as Jellicoe here says, you know, you can't let the Romulans get, you can't cross the neutral zone, and you can't let the Romulans get the Protostar. So you have to destroy it. You have to destroy it. You know, that's the way it is. That's your orders. Get out of here. And he like hangs up. And Janeway's in despair. She doesn't want to have to kill kids or just, you know, and she's also trying to find out what happened to Chakotay. So, so that's, you know, that's definitely a part of the story.
Do you get the impression when they had this conversation, because I couldn't really clear it up throughout the episode, when she talks about the weapon and falling into Romulan hands, did she kind of infer that there's something on that ship that the kids, like, she figured out the living construct, but not exactly what it was? Or is she talking about the Protostar technology?
The Protostar technology.
Okay, so she doesn't still, because it sounded almost like she kind of had figured out from Frex that there was something aboard the ship that was bad news, but I wasn't sure if maybe, yeah, I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I know. I it's because this Protostar is literally built around an actual Protostar, and that it's a very experimental technology. They don't want the Romulans to have it. And so
it's just because she said it weapon. We didn't want the weapon to fall in their hands. So that's why I was confused. I was like, is the Protostar, they would consider that a weapon? Or I guess because it's so powerful.
I wouldn't consider that. I guess a very fast ship could be considered a sort of a weapon, but it is an odd choice of words. I agree.
Yeah. So that's why I was like, oh, did she figure it out somehow? Because like Barnes Frex was not a great source. So I was like, oh, Janeway, she got it. Like she figured out there's something like on there that's dangerous, but
maybe Janeway is voiced by Kate Mulgrew, as is the hologram Janeway. Mm-hmm. They arrive here at this planet, this base here. I don't know if we remember the name of it. He does say it in the episode, but it's so early, I can't recall. But it's like this trading post. It's unregulated. It's a little bit off the grid, so to speak. It's in the neutral zone, I guess. And you can't beam down. You have to like go to the space elevator, which I thought was neat.
I was laughing about that because we just finished watching Lower Decks, and I was like, did the teams like talk to each other or?
Maybe.
Well, like that whole Lord Dex thing where she's like, just call it a space elevator. It's just what it is.
Space elevator. Yeah, like because orbital lift or something, I think, has been used.
Yeah. And then they even get to later on the jumping, which Mariner makes fun of a little with the whole thing when she's working. So I thought, were they chatting these teams? Because it seems kind of coincidental that they had the exact same thing going on.
I think that the fact that O'Connor had the eye patch over in Lower Decks says that they are talking to each other.
That's true, because that's not really referenced. Like, that's not something we...
There was no reason to give him an eye patch in Lower Decks and then continue with it here or vice versa. You know, so it was interesting for them to make sure that they were connected on that front. That's they thought about that. And O'Connor is like leads them into like the town here where Zero and Jank and Pog are gonna stay behind and do repairs on the Protostar. And this is where Janeway warns Dal, like, you know, if something's too good to be true, it probably is. Watch out. Like, that's part of the lesson of the episode. Along with, like, this promise of, like, unlocking his genetic potential that this doctor throws at him here as sort of, like this temptation. Going down the space elevator, the orbital lift or whatnot, you know, Rock Talk really into it. Checking out this, like, city that's being revealed here. Really awesome-looking episode. I thought, you know, all the visuals and like the setting here, we get to meet this this doctor. What's her doctor? Jago.
Don't let your genes impede your dreams. I'm Dr. Jago, and through my genetic augmentation process, I'll bring out the best in you.
Yeah. Rock Talk has this great curiosity and interest in this. It's another form of science and genetics, and we find out here from what's his name, O'Connor, this is the client they're coming to see, because he mentions like there's a client, you know, I have to get some things and we're gonna make a deal, and you know, this is part
Where's Davin? I need him to come back. I saw this and I was like, uh-oh, is this too Star Wars for Davin again? It was a bit Star Wars-esque, the cityscape, so.
Yeah, like, it's a cool, like, looking science fiction city, and I really loved it. Not too
much, but the on the ground where they show all the neon lights, a little, I mean, that's kind of Blade Runner-y, too, so, I mean, which I think
is... Yeah, like, I like seeing, I hate how sometimes there's too many planets in Star Trek that are just, like, these desert planets with, like, one... shack or something, or you know, it's they're unremarkable looking, but just to see some of these more like complex science fiction cities, I think is cool and something that they should do more of, and they have been doing, I think, in Lower Decks and in this now, so it's great. Seeing this lab here of Dr. Jago, and you know, they really do a good job, I think, trying to like, hey, like, we want the kids to be interested, like, these are helixes, this is like base pairs, and telling us some basics of the periodic table and science, and making that stuff interesting and relevant, you know, and useful in a way that's it's part of the story. That's one thing Star Trek has done very well in the past, and I think like this is something Prodigy does quite well. Some of the newer shows hit and miss, but this was really good.
I like her enthusiasm. I think that's something kids don't see that often. A lot of the times when someone is speaking like in scientific ways in shows for kids, they're like, boring, or say that in English this time, like, you know, just give me, you know, boil it down for me, I don't want to hear your nerd speak. So it's really nice to have a character that's like, this stuff is so cool, like, I want to know more. Like, that's how kids should feel about science, I think.
I think it was really brilliant getting a child to voice this character. And it really does, because all the others are obviously adults, and even Murph. And, you know, like, I think that there's an innocence to this character that's genuine. And versus like if you had like a voice actor trying to play a child, you know, that it wouldn't quite work as well as I think it is working in the purpose of how they want to use this character. Mm-hmm. As like the learner, the scientific with the curiosity, you know. When I was a kid, I asked way too many questions, and they would give me books and they'd say, here's all your answers, leave me alone. So it's I relate to Rock Talk in a lot of ways. The Dr. Jago here is giving O'Connor a hard time. He's late, all these things, but then we see that there's a super interest here. We think that Dr. Jago is interested in Murph maybe at first.
Mm-hmm, that's what I thought,
but then it's actually Dal, and you know, interested in his cheekbones, I guess, and his ears and his skin color, very unusual, and with the purple skin, I suppose. I don't know how many purple skinned aliens we've seen, but
so if I got what she was saying, he's just a flashy human when it comes down to it. A human with a designer skin, I guess, of various alien bits.
He seems like he's probably like 90% human and like, you know, or something in that range, and has a bunch of like little bit of DNA. But you know, kind of like how they'll make different species of fruit and plants and whatever, you know, like, you know, you see crossbreed, but he's generally human. I was just thinking the other day, I'm like, it's really odd to me that Star Trek Prodigy doesn't have a human character. It has a hologram Janeway based on a human, but there's no like, In this crew, there was no like human. Like, here's the you know, versus all the other Star Trek shows, going back to the original series, which were, you know, other than Spock, all humans. And then, you know, they've had more diverse crews ever since, like starting with Next Generation, Data, Worf, and the like in the mix. And then you get, you know, Deep Space Nine, which is very different. Bajorans and Cardassians and Ferengis and everybody's on the team. And Voyager, much of the same. Enterprise had Denobulians, but then on, so when we get to this show Prodigy, you know, there's no humans here. I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. And it really just hit me the other day, but Dal kind of is a human.
Yeah.
And
at least that's what I took from the explanation. Like, the other stuff was kind of incidental, like not really, they're kind of recessive. Like, they don't really do much for his everyday functioning, essentially. Right. It just made him look like he looks, but.
Well, yeah. Like, we're not quite sure. Like, there's a whole bunch of dormant genes that he's carrying. that, you know, aren't necessarily active. And we saw that some of that was getting activated in this episode, but it could mean that he has more potential. It could mean that it depends on what the genetic designers intended. You know, we know that sometimes with these genetically engineered people that they're designed to mature at a certain age or just go through some kind of a metamorphosis later on. There are no purple humans that I know of. So he definitely, and Spotted for that matter. So I think he's definitely not fully human either. How much and what is left a little bit ambiguous in this episode, but she, you know, the doctor explains mostly they start off with a human and then they sort of added more, but see at least maybe two hearts here. I'm not sure what I'm necessarily seeing.
Oh wait, no, never mind.
There's some really, like I got to say, I got an issue here with these DNAs. You know, one, okay, this might be Vulcan DNA, fine, Klingon DNA, but this is the symbol of the Maquis. Okay, the Maquis don't have a DNA; they're like a group of people, like who are made up of different species. They're like the Federation. There's not like, but
unless that she linked it to a person in her database, that what is part of the Maquis?
Maybe like it would. You know, this is obviously Earth over here, and
because they didn't say who the human was. They said she said it was a very basic, boring humanoid.
Yeah, Homo sapien, she says, and then you kind of see like it goes Homo sapien, and then the next one here is Vulcan. And then I'm not sure what this one is. We have Bajoran up here and then a Dominion symbol. So maybe he's got some Jem'Hadar DNA or something like that. Or we got Cardassian. We got Klingon, like I mentioned earlier. Breen, Ferengi, Gorn. Others I don't recognize. Tholian. So Tholians? He's got Tholian DNA? Okay. So anyway. They're like spiders.
Yeah, Sam's saying in the chat what I was saying. Yeah, the Maquis could be the human, like who represents the human in the. But I wonder. Maybe they're.
No, not based on how I think they designed this. I think that the Earth here at the beginning is the beginning.
Oh,
the,
I see. Okay, yeah, I didn't see the Earth.
Right, and then this Maquis one. What actually? No, it looks like maybe he's got like a father line or a mother line, and maybe the Maquis mother. Maybe that's it.
That's true because he has to have, there would have to have him unless they can, you would have to have a sperm and an egg. So it would have to be 50-50 and then they attach the genetics to one or either side, right? So yeah, there would be a humanoid.
Yeah, it looks like that's maybe, so maybe he's got some kind of Maquis mother. Maybe there's more to learn out here. Oh, Davin's back. Davin.
Yeah.
I lost power. Just my house, seemingly.
Oh no, your laptop is too powerful. It took out the whole house.
That was my first thought. I'm like, oh no, I'm running the dryer and my new laptop at the same time.
Oh no.
Davin, we were just pointing out that one of the DNAs that Dal apparently comes from is a Maquis DNA.
What does that even mean?
I know, that's confusing. Like, it's...
We're debating if it's a hint at to his parentage, or they just found a bunch of symbols and stuff.
They just found a bunch of Star Trek symbols and they threw it on the poster. Yeah. And like, here you go. Not realizing
that they went back to Eric Soong's augments for this.
Yes.
Like, did some of them get away? I watched that three-parter recently, and I'm pretty sure they got them all. But...
Someone
could have broke them out.
All the augments. I mean, he still had this whole like room full of like embryos. So like maybe someone hatched more of Eric Tsung's augments. Well,
he'd have to be rare because otherwise she wouldn't have been as excited to see Dal as she was, right? So it's not something she comes across that often. So I obviously something was snuck out or someone was snuck out to.
Yeah. How did you guys feel about
this guy? They said that augments made him, right? Like he was made by augments.
Designed him, yeah.
He's an human augment of sorts, yes.
Which is what we were discussing. What I took from it, I don't know if you disagree, was that like he just has like the like visually alien DNA, but at the base of it, he's really just a normal human kind of with like an alien looking skin, essentially.
And skull ganglia.
And again,
like a few base pairs of all these different species, but he's just like a human template. The initial template was just a human.
Bezos was like, you know, people that take their 23andMe thing and they're like 98% British, but they're like, there was that 1% from China. Like, okay.
How did you feel about the emotional?
I'm 1% Irish.
Like, in terms of like how he took this news, that he was kind of down on it, that you know, he thought he was going to find a family or parents, but that's not going to happen because it seems like he doesn't have parents, it seems. And he's kind of a one of a kind. There is no other, he's not a member of a specific species, kind of human.
Super interesting.
Yeah.
I was sold on this episode as soon as this all happened. And I had a good feeling about this doctor. She seemed cool right at the start. I'm like, oh, this is going to be good. Did we know who voiced that character?
Yeah, let me check. It was,
she sort of sounded familiar, but I couldn't place it.
Amy Hill? I'm not sure who that is.
I will look up.
Amy Hill, she's been on some stuff. Including Lilo and Stitch, Big Gay Love. She goes back to like doing Night Court and a bunch of different shows.
She's one of those like, I know you, I've seen you in like everything, different things.
Yeah, she's been working a long time. Mm-hmm. Very interesting they brought her in for this role. Yeah, good casting. And I like, you know, this offer that Dal is given here, like, you know, we can change your DNA, but we can make you have different abilities and give out your full potential. And they, you know, but they explain this, it will change you, you know, and you won't be who you are. And he kind of takes Janeway's advice here at first. Like, if something seems too good to be true, it probably is. So he says, you know, we're not here for this. We got to keep moving. But then very quickly has second thoughts and turns around and says, you know, like, can you do it? And takes the offer here. And so this is where we cut away. We get this other next scene here with Essentia and the diviner. And I was starting to like go like another scene with these two talking. Like, where is this going? Like, what are they trying to build here? I was already starting to get weird vibes. I kept noticing that Essentia always wears gloves, and those are not Starfleet regulation to be wearing on non-away missions. So I was like, there's something curious here. I think that the reveal at the end, I think, is part of it. You know,
I also noticed that I always thought, I was like, oh, maybe it was just the way the art works. But I was like, she looks really a lot like Gwen. Like, I was like, why do they look so similar? Was it? I just chopped it up to maybe, you know, certain artists or designers, like the characters kind of, you know, end up looking a bit the same. But now I see that was deliberate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because facially they look like sisters.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Especially having them meeting in the last episode, and there was kind of a weird connection there that was like, well, why would these two have this other than they kind of look alike? But now we're finding that, okay, who is Essentia? Who is Essentia, a new character, or is it? I was almost like, is this Gwen?
That's what I wondered.
Gwen from the future.
Are you sure?
Yeah, because the diviner said he was sent back from the future. And yes. Gwen looks at him and she looks just like Gwen, and she says, you're not the only one they sent back.
But she's also a clone. So
of him.
She would have more than one. Or I don't know
enough about how their species works, but like at the end I was like, is this a new character or is this like an other version of Gwen from another timeline or something like that?
Her voice changed to Gwen's voice though.
It was almost exactly Gwen's voice, and
that's cute. I wish I checked the
I haven't been able to like kind of figure that out. Maybe the closed captions would tell us like what is the name of the character giving us these lines. Because I don't know if it changed, like, is this still Jamila Jamil who's doing this voice at the end, or is this now Ella Purnell? Like, I wasn't quite sure. So when Janeway comes in on this scene, when I watched it the second time tonight, I was like, Janeway interrupts this, right? But it's kind of covered up here, and she's like, he's like, Admiral, like, please let me go after those kids, and I'll cross over. And she's like, we can't do that. We have to be better than the Romulans. We have to be the good guys, you know? And she's like, but if we're thinking about cheating, then they're definitely thinking about cheating. And then we got away to the Romulans, and they're already on it. They're going after the Protostar. I love this science fiction city. This is one thing we were wondering around, Davin, was whether you would find this to Star Wars or not. But I liked it a lot.
The city? No, yeah. It's fine. It's right along things we see in Star Trek all the time. Free cloud and whatnot.
Yeah, I liked it, but it definitely reminded me of running around in the Star Trek video, like MMOs. That's what it looked like to me when you're running around.
Yeah, there are some Star Wars cities and worlds that have this look too, but you know, it's like I said, like you're gonna have some crossovers there.
Even as a Blade Runner look, because
yeah, that's what I
neon guess. With like the gray towers yeah. and
yeah. Dal's come back to the group here in this later scene, doing flips and. A bigger vocabulary now, making fun of O'Connor.
Real sagacious.
Yeah, here, where's the
The upside is that it made me a more perspicacious person.
Perspicacious? Yeah. Wow, I never heard you use such big words.
Well, you know, if you were sagacious.
Maybe you just weren't sagacious enough to notice.
And then he was like, making fun
perspicacious,
of
perspicacious, having a ready insight into an understanding of things.
Yes. So being perceptive. It's like another word for perceptive, basically. And perspicacious means having a ready... that's having a ready insight into the understanding of things. Sagacious is having or shown keen mental discernment and good judgment.
Shrewd, so, if you will.
Shrewd, if you will. Yes. I didn't...
More big words. Tune into the Locutors of Trek audio podcast and hear Dave... Other Dave say all kinds of stuff like that and watch me try to keep up.
Yeah. He's got a big vocabulary.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. He makes fun of O'Connor here. He's like, I'll use slow words for you. And I was like, okay. Like, this is,
you know, we go to ship.
Yeah.
O'Connor's just like, all right, cool.
Oh yeah. Good. I right? got that. Even get a chuckle at a rock talk here. But Gwyn's not liking this new Dal. You know, she does not approve. And she's going to get on.
Too perspicacious for her.
Too perspicacious. Or, you know, she's maybe too sagacious. We'll have to see. Anyway, so we see Jacob Hogg's back on the Protostar. He's trying to repair the ship. And he hears something. He goes, hey, Zero, is that you? And then he gets hit with, like, this green thing. And it, like, electrocutes him.
Like, he was like, ooh, what's this thing?
Yeah. I love his reaction. Like, what? You know, and then, Zero fixes the Janeway hologram. But then at that moment, the Romulans get Zero with a similar device, electrocuting Zero and disabling them. And Janeway's like, no, Romulans, you know, they are here. What do you guys think of this?
The Romulans look cool. It's a great Star Trek episode. It's got the Romulans. It's got the neutral zone.
Are they very thigh? Are they very thigh? Like a very, very strong.
It's like
thigh.
Armor.
Okay.
It's like, yeah.
The plate armor.
Where's, I think I, oh, here it is.
The Romulans. I always knew they were without honor. Now they have proven it.
They she looks like an actress. Like, I don't know, she reminds me of someone. This lead Romulan.
Yeah, me too. I agree. Like, there seems like based on a real person.
You know? Yeah, that's what it seems look. Like. I feel like there's an actress I've seen that looks just like that.
Yeah, I really like the look of this costume and like this Romulan design here. This is one of the better Romulan uniform designs, I think, in a lot of ways. Really textured and interesting, and I like just the. I guess it's more like their encounter suit, whatever, but with the drape over it. But it's neat, and I like how they like then they go for like their little space jump here. You know, it's really just, cool.
I'm just laughing. I just watched the Lower Decks season. That's why. Again, with the space jumps on the
yeah, more space jumps,
and the elevators,
space elevators. It's you know, it's a common. It's an everyday thing in Star Trek. So they say, hey, the Romulans are going after the Protostar, and then I noticed here. What's up with the sense he has boots? These red boots don't seem like regulation either. Is this another hint that they're giving us?
May's fine with it, though. She's not suspicious.
Well, I think she's a little too lax.
Sagacious enough.
This is why you need to pay attention to uniforms. This is how you spot imposters.
This is how you know the traitors in your midst.
Yeah, wrong
they
boots.
Always dress traitory.
Treacherous. yeah, anyway, they go to like the pet shop here for a moment, too, guys. With the puppies. Getting that, they got I you Rock Talk
seeing this? This is the best thing Rock Talk's ever seen.
Yeah, Rock Talk was all into this. But then I did like this with Dal, who had like a spider sense, and was able to, you know, feel like the Romulans coming here. Something's not right, we need to go. And then we see these cables come down from above, and the Romulans like come down.
It was
like
Klingon instinct, I think.
Yeah,
there was a Klingon symbol there.
Yeah, you know, he does go.
Klingon can tell someone's going to kill you by looking them in the eye, something like that, you know.
Right.
At this point, like, he hasn't pushed the button. Is this still a result of what's been done? Or is he just like really confident now and it's like a placebo effect and then he pushes the button later? I couldn't figure that out. Like,
I felt like it was like kind of starting, but it had like when he hits this button here, which comes up in like the next, this is after, it was after.
I thought that's what it was supposed to be. Like, that's what the enhancements he's supposed to have. He's not supposed to push the button.
The button's like, he was almost like he went into turbo mode or something.
Yeah, that's what I was confused. Yeah,
he,
I was like,
he activated all his genes, he said.
Yeah, yeah, at once. So the hearing and him doing the flips and taking out the Romulans, was that just base Dal all along if he was confident enough to do it? Or was it already having a bit of an effect and he just overdid it? That's what I couldn't figure out.
Well, did he not know what Prescaparius and Sagacious meant before he said those words? Or would DNA help you know? They would not teach you new words. Like, if I got a genetic enhancement, I would not know how to say new words. Like, I would just... I don't think that's how it works.
That's true. And he did read O'Connor's mind, so.
And with like Universal Translator.
The scientist said she was going to just activate certain things. She's like, fix you the way they were meant to. But like, not everything. I don't think.
Yeah. Like, it wasn't meant. It was like the result here is not what was intended. I just want to point out, I love the Jat Vash disruptor that they brought in here. Even though in Star Trek Picard, which is where this design was first used, it shoots like a red kind of like ball thing. And in this episode, they're shooting like green laser type things. More.
So
like
you think she's Jat Vash?
She might be Jat Vash. They said that there were Tal Shiar, and the Jat Vash are like a kind of a subset of the Tal Shiar. The even darker version. So yeah, it could be very much. But these are all Jat Vash weapons that they're using here. But they don't shoot like Jat Vash for whatever reason. Anyway, so yeah, this is where O'Connor is like, because they think O'Connor's the captain. He's like, I'm not the captain, and they laugh, and then he's like, yeah, I'm taking off. And I love how peace. They're like,
nice knowing you.
Yeah, peace. See you never. See you later, O'Connor. I don't know if we'll see him again. But yeah, I just like how the Gwyn and Rock Talk were like, oh, he's the worst, you know. And then Dal's like, Murph. Murph is all like shaking up in the ball hair, getting crazy. And this is where, like, you know, he's starting to feel like his powers, but he's like, I need a little bit more. I need this turbo boost. And so we see like inside of his bloodstream here, you know, that there's like an activation. And then, like, you know, he's beating them up. Knocking them around. They're trying to shoot him, but he can dodge all the beams, those green beams. Murph was heating up, guys. You know,
and then, out of here.
Oh yeah, he like runs up the wall like the Matrix style here and like does a backflip. You know, comes down and
superhero landing.
Yeah, too. Yeah, absolutely. And then then we see the Klingon ridges come out here. And even grows a little bit of a beard, which is not necessary for to be Klingon, but you know, they tend to
that little rich. Seventh grade stubble he's got right there.
Yeah, he's like, I will fight for honor, you know. And it's a bit of a trope, and you know, they're kind of being it would be like if you had like, you know, DNA of an Irishman, and then you were like, I, you know, you're talking Irish or something all of a sudden, you know. It's just like, I don't really know what you're going for here, but they're trying to teach us about the different species, I guess. And the Dal is a little bit of everything. He's a
I guess they would wonder if this they're backing like kind of ancestral memory kind of deal. Like, it's part of the genes that you know these things kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. You're just bored knowing all Klingons are bored knowing this. Like, yeah. You know? Except for Alexander.
Is he part Trill and that's where he gets his spots? I don't know where he gets the purple or the blue hand slime, though.
Yeah, that was a weird one. But we saw there was like Tholian DNA on there. There was like some weird things. Yeah.
That shouldn't even work. They're silicon based.
The Gorn were on there.
It's Federation's the Gorn.
The Gorn were part of this.
It's DNA. The Gorn.
It's the Gorn.
It's the Gorn.
Yeah. Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Anyway, so they're not feeling too good about Dal at this point in the episode. The Romulans wake up, and is this where they run away, and they get away from the Romulans, and like his abilities, you know, he's able to use, let them get, like, they kind of do the whole sneak by, and then he gets all Vulcan for a second. Logically, it must be because I'm using my powers, but he's like changing through all these things and just going, it's not well. So Rock Talk's like, we need to get him to sick bay. Gwyn just hopes this is not permanent because she's not too impressed with this whole situation. So it's a bit of a comedy thing they're going for here. Murph in the hamster ball, going wild, and we'll break out later on. Anyway, so let's get him going here. They run away. Oh, and like I love how Rock Talk looks up at the poster of Dr. Jaga. I was like, ah, you Dr. Jaga, you screwed everything up here with Del. Space elevator.
It was a good, I guess that she kind of wraps that up at the end too. It was kind of teaching kids that like science is cool, but like you can misuse science.
There is a great quote here at the end here from Rock Talk where she says like science is necessary and science rules are necessary.
Science rules and science needs rules. Yeah,
science rules and science needs rules.
Needs rules, and or else you'll end up like Dal here, going along control. I like that. Okay, so this is almost like a different kind of a chase sequence. But it's on elevators. Two elevators going up, the space elevator. And the Romulans are in the other elevator. Actually, they're in two elevators coming up beside them on both sides. And they're shooting at them.
It's like two Dederedecks. They like to have you surrounded.
They like to flank you from both sides. That's like the Romulan style. And going on here. But maybe we should get Murphy to play Murph in a Star Trek Radio Theater. I just thought. Murph. Murphy's Murph.
How's your squeaking, Murphy?
Squeaking. Yeah. I'll work on that. That's put on the encounter suits here. And, this is where like the slide
comes like.
I hope that was in some kind of like other thing or something. I don't know what
they why doing. Am I leaking?
Good question. Even Murph is disgusted by this whole thing. Murph's going to throw up, you know, not too impressed. They're like, can you just stop sliming over things for a minute here in this situation? They deal with this quite casually. And then she even blocks their disruptor blast with her they call it the heirloom. I think that's heirloom. Heirloom, yeah. Blocking out here. This Romulan comes on over, and this is where Murph busts out. Yeah. Oh yeah, I think Gwyn actually knocks one off here. She knocks off that one guy. And then I think they have a bazooka here at one point. And they're like, no, don't use your heirloom, Gwyn. Trust me, because they want him to get struck by the lightning. And so this is where like Rock Talk is using her science abilities to like misdirect them here. And because she knows the storm will get them, and that's what happens. They get smashed by the lightning, and so they're able to incapacitate that elevator on that side of them. Meanwhile, they see that
the thing away because it would be a conductor for the lightning or an attractor to the lightning.
Yeah, but
it's still just like further up her arm.
Yeah, well, I guess the science of that doesn't make sense, does it? But they tried, but there's still Romulans pursuing here. And meanwhile, back on here on the Dauntless, they're saying, okay, well, we can't, if the Romulans capture Dal and then they're able to capture the Protostar, then they'll have the ship, and then they're, you know, we can't let that happen. So Jellicoe told Admiral Janeway, Vice Admiral Janeway, you better destroy that ship if it looks like they're going to get a hold of it. So that's what kind of like, there's some stakes here. This space elevator chase continues. Really cool sequence. Loved the green disruptor beams coming up here. Really, you know, a visually very cool sequence, cutting it back and forth to the Dauntless, and so, you know, and I Sensia here, like this ensign saying, you can't do this, you know, Admiral. And it was interesting that I was like, why would Sensia be the one to say, like, if anything, this would be Tysis, the first officer, who, if they're going to like voice objections around this course of action, Not Essentia. And she's like, back off, stand down, Essentia, you know, we have no choice. So they fire these torpedoes. But we, you know, but a few moments later, Janeway's like, we're going to destroy, we're going to disable the ship and make sure to program these torpedoes that they won't hurt anybody. You know, so there's kind of like a little bit of like saving face here, I think, that they gave to the character.
Like, if you blow it up, doesn't that release the energy of like a star right next to a planet? Like, how could you not do any damage?
That's a very good point. So, a
couple plot holes. I love this episode, but a couple of
yeah, like it would be hard to. Yeah, if you try to destroy the protostar, you're likely to, maybe you create a supernova or something like along those lines. It could be not good. Is this where Murph jumps out? Yeah, mm-hmm. Murph gets out of the hamster ball and jumps across to the other space elevator. It just like takes on these Romulans, you know, with a smile.
Don't worry, Murph, you're indestructible.
You're indestructible, and Murph's going on here. Like I was like, this is awesome. Like I already saw there was like a one headline from this episode where like Murph is a boss. Now
yeah. I kind of see this as a plot hole too, in a way, though.
Why is so that?
Baroness Frex knew what Murph was.
Yes.
So you could draw the conclusion that a great deal of Starfleet in the Federation know what Murph is, as far as these slime worms go.
Maybe.
And if they're this crazy capable, like how are they not all, like in Starfleet or?
Unless he was wrong.
Like a crazy enemy of Starfleet or something, you know.
Or there's something else going on. I think there's something else going on. I don't think he's a typical representation of whatever Frex
slime worm was.
Maybe he might be the first one to go into a cocoon. We don't know if that's a normal thing, you know, or not. Like, we can assume it is, but we could also...
But he was indestructible before that. I just find it hard to believe we haven't heard of this indestructible worm.
Well, yeah, we have.
Never took one aboard.
Big galaxy out there. I can let it go, but it, I don't know.
Looks like we found our new security officer.
No one's ever taken them off their planet. Why would you take a slime with you on a starship?
Maybe no slime worm ever wanted to leave a planet before, and this is the first time they're you know, really getting into space themselves. There's more story here. I feel like you can fill in these plot holes, if you know, or like sort of.
Jane says Wesley knew about the slime worms.
Wesley knew about this. When did Wesley Crusher say he knew about those slime worms? I need to. I'd like to know more about that. Anyway, they get up to the platform of the protostar, and we see these torpedoes coming. We can see kind of where like the ships are, I guess. This map, I'm still trying to figure out like who's where. So obviously this is the Romulans over here, and this is the Dauntless, and so they're in the middle.
That must be the neutral zone.
Yeah. Anyway, so they're like, no, we have to abort because they've defeated the Romulans. And so Janeway's like, abort, abort. And the torpedoes are coming at them. It's not looking good. And they're able to get them to abort at the right second here. And it works. And they go, yay! It's like, woo! And, cool. But here we see Essentia is disturbed. She's not joining in with the rest of the crew. There's something to her, you know? More to this. We'll find out that it's the reveal at the end here. And then we get the, you know, like Dal being sad and, you know, being regretful of, I guess, going for this and trying to, you know, take this genetic thing.
I just wanted you to look at me like you look at O'Connor.
I just wanted you to look at me like you look at O'Connor.
I think this is why I don't like Dal. He's too broody. It's like, he's basically Batman. And I'm not a fan.
He's not.
He's not like Odo Broody.
Oh my God, Jane did clarify. Apparently, he did know what a melanoid slime worm was. Wow, what a deep cut that is.
Well, taking the Starfleet
interest. Jane's the new king of trivia in the Mater family. Retire, Dave. You've been
and a melanoid slime worm. This is okay. Okay. Well, good catch.
That's amazing. Jane. That's like the best trivia I've heard in a long time.
Maybe she should be on the trivia challenge, the trouble with
apparently
trivia.
So.
Yeah, she would, so. Especially if I'm not there, I can't.
You're not allowed.
We also see here Murph, guys, they get farther up the space elevator and they don't have their glass or whatever anymore. That Murph has just become like this, like a little shield, because I guess it'd be, they have the helmets on for air, but it's not enough to like survive the vacuum of space, I would imagine, up that high. So they're heading up and they get up there, and I liked this with the whole, this is rock talk, you know.
This is Rock Talk.
I think
first. Science rules, and science needs rules.
She finally lays out everybody's role, like, officially, too, in this, right? Like,
yes.
This is the first time she's like, this is the medical officer. I'm the science officer.
I'm the I can now be the science officer because Merv is now the security officer. So now, like, I don't have to worry about doing two jobs, I guess. Jan comes the engineer. We know Dal's the captain. Making Gwyn, I guess, the first officer is kind of what the role they're going for with her. Mm-hmm. And Zero, yeah, is the medical / pilot of the crew, and Janeway is like their kind of like their mom advisor type, I guess, you know, wise old one.
I don't think we'll ever see another pilot doctor again. He's probably going to be
pilot and a doctor. Well, you know, it gives you something to do.
It's a skeleton crew; they got to make do. Was he always so patched together like this?
Who?
Zero, like he's mm-hmm. just like a bunch of different.
Yes, Zero's body is made all put together. Yeah,
now you
see,
can
that's
see
how it. Bad my laptop yeah. was. I didn't notice.
You didn't even know what you've been seeing. Maybe all the things you didn't like, you didn't even know what you saw.
It's funny the pilot doctor thing. It reminds me of, wasn't there a whole thing on Discovery? I guess Davin wouldn't know, where it was argument between Stamets and Detmer, the pilot, like, you know, my job's the hardest. People, I'm responsible for flying the ship. It's like, well, you know, I have lives in my hands too. It's not just about you, blah, blah, blah. And they're yelling at each other. It's like,
oh, there was that scene, yeah. Like, where yeah. like, who's more depressed or has the, who's
like,
more,
who has more responsibility of the crew on their shoulders?
Who has
like
more PTSD, I think was what they
Zero.
Were really
Zero
for.
Has the most responsibility. Yes. The doctor and the pilot.
Doctor and the pilot. Yeah, make a medic of sorts. Yeah. Okay. And then we get this reveal here at the end with the Dauntless, where Ascensia comes in and says, there's been a development, you know, a Dreadnought activate. And we've been like, where's Jimmy Simpson? Where's Dreadnought? He's, you know, they got to be bringing him back somehow. He's just in the table the whole time, guys. You
what
know?
A convenient henchman. Part yeah. henchman, part coffee table.
Yeah. This pose here from Ascensia indicates villain for sure to me. Mm. And you know, it's, you know, Diviner is still like, what's going on? You know, he doesn't even know who Dreadnought is. See this reveal here with the little device, very similar to the one that modified Dal's to genetics. I meant to show us that, you know, she's impersonating a Trill, not actually a Trill, and is actually a member of this Diviner species. Now, I would say that this is a different face than Gwyn's. Mm.
The hair is a lot further back, too.
And the forehead's different, and I feel like the shape's different. But the voice, you're right, sure does sound similar. Here, let's just quickly I want to see if I can find a shot here of Gwyn to maybe put side by side to see if they're, you know, are these two different characters or not?
Yeah, I think. I wonder if, like, my guess is maybe like another clone.
Lily Gwyn, look at that.
Yeah.
Is it the same character? No, the foreheads are different. This forehead is not the same.
Yeah. Yeah, but that so doesn't mean anything.
But I mean, we've never seen another female of the species, so they could all look very similar like this.
Yeah, I'd say based on their lines are a little different.
Eyebrows are different.
These lines on the nose are a little different.
If they're related at all, I would wonder if it's another clone of their or a part of the family.
The eyebrows are, but it's also this facial expression here that we have in this particular shot. But I think that the forehead alone says to me this is a different character. But
I'm going to disagree.
Yeah, you might be right. We'll see. If this is, so I like, at first I was like, is this a Gwyn from like a future, or is there some kind of timey-wimey business going on here? What is this? But, you know, they go to the credits at that point, and the episode's over. And so I really liked this, where they left this, you know, a lot of intrigue. You're not the only one that they sent back to look for the ship or something like that. So I would imagine that this is a new character that is a contemporary of the Diviner, or who was involved in that mission or something like that.
It explains a lot too, because remember you guys were, I think, discussing the Dreadnought and how come he seemed to kind of question the Diviner. If he's his boss, why is he kind of questioning his decisions? So obviously he's answering to more than one person in this timeline.
Yeah,
but
I agree with that. Okay, so let's rate this episode. We've been talking about it for an hour, which is longer than we usually go. So I think we had a lot to talk about. I really liked this episode. I'm going in high. I think I like this just as much as I like All the Worlds of Stage. I'm going to 10. Progeny.
I was going to say 8.5. I liked it. I was good, but I was not up there with All the Worlds of Stage. That was just more fun.
Okay. So 9.5 is our collective rating tonight. Really strong episode. And I'd say it was a Dal-focused episode, but there was a lot going on. All the characters had something to do in this episode.
I'm always amazed with this show with such a short runtime. They're so efficient. Like, to introduce like a character growth moment for Dal, we got answers to where he comes from. They had a little character growth moment where he kind of questioned himself, got the thing on his neck, and then they brought that back and like, well, we explained that, so we're gonna see it again and have a big reveal.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's like, very efficient.
It's very efficient because they don't have to, yeah, set that up, or like previously on Prodigy when we set this up. It was like, we'll just do it in the same episode. And it really worked here in a way that didn't feel forced. I was like, oh, okay. And so you set up this character like many episodes ago, and we have no reason to believe that Sansia was other somebody just on this team here with Janeway. But it turns out, yeah, it's an imposter of sorts, or somebody. And who was there, a real Trill Essentia? I don't know. We're gonna have to find that out. The next episode,
she wear gloves and boots.
Does she wear the wrong colored boots? You know, that's a good question. We're gonna have to find that thing out.
Now I can be a little more forgiving of the doctor for being such an a-hole to her. He was really rude.
Just think of how angry Dave will be, though, if we do meet the real Essentia and she doesn't wear gloves and boots. He'll be like, Janeway, you should have known.
How did you not get that?
How did you not know? You let that. You let her wear. Well, like, you were, let her wear red boots on the bridge. Really? No, I don't know.
Do you Jellicle guys remember what is it that she knew that was like? Janeway was like, "Good work, Ensign," and then the doctor was like, called her a brown noser. There was something that she told Janeway to do. Was that like a must have been an also a giveaway? Like, she knew a specific way to access.
I need to go back and watch something. That because there was something that, that she was really good at or was proficient at.
She recommended a certain course, and Admiral's like, good work. I remember specifically because the doctor called her a brown noser in like not a nice way. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah. Dude. Yeah. He was not happy for her in any way.
Yeah.
Maybe that was the Tellarite in him. Sam gives us a 9.5. Okay. I know it is, he wants to know what time it is where you are.
10:33.
So,
well, the baby just woke.
The progeny's awake. We've talked about the episode, so I think we can wrap up our stream tonight. Thanks to both of you for coming on to join me. Happy Thanksgiving to all the Americans out there, and have Black Friday sales tomorrow, and all those good things coming up. Hope you have a very happy holiday season wherever you are, and we hope you've enjoyed our coverage here of Star Trek Prodigy. Season one, the longest season I've ever done, ever. We've been covering the season for well over a year.
How many episodes are we in now?
Only 16.
Oh, okay.
But they've done a lot with these 16 episodes. Preludes is the next one.
I had a whole human as we were referring to.
Yeah. Like,
had a whole human from whole, the time we started.
There were children not even bored when the season started. So
yeah, exactly.
It's
now they're watching the show. Isn't it a beautiful thing?
He did watch with me, actually.
So there's like, it's been a good one. We hope you check out all our podcasts here on Live Long and Podcast, including we've been doing an ongoing series with Star Trek Enterprise, going through all those episodes week by week. We're almost done season two there. We do those on Mondays. On Tuesdays, we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. We've been doing that since the pandemic, and we're almost, we're well into season six now. Check that out. We've been going through all the episodes. We just did maybe the worst episode we ever did this past Tuesday, but you know, it's all uphill from here, or downhill.
Bad.
Perhaps. And then we've done shows like Strange New Worlds and Discovery and all of the new ones, Picard and Discovery, Strange New Worlds. What am I forgetting? Lower Decks. And so, yeah, check out all those great ones. Plus Star Trek Radio Theater coming up. We have our one. We're going to be recording this on. Oh, no, this is the wrong date. It's going to be actually the Friday, December 16th. I need to get that fixed up quickly. But yeah, we're going to be doing Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, guys. Are you guys excited?
Yeah.
Yeah. I get to play the only Star Trek character that looks like me.
He's the only one that looks like you.
Think. Try to think of another one. You can't.
I feel like the last time I saw this
Maury Ginsburg
movie, I could be wrong, was in Las Vegas. We went to the Star Trek Experience, and it was playing on the TVs in the background, and we sat and watched, I think, like three quarters of the movie while drinking a giant, like, fishbowl of alcohol that was called, like, I don't know, some sign, like, Romulan something or other. That's the last time I watched this movie.
Yeah, well, you're going to enjoy it.
The worst part about this whole thing is
you got to do a song and a dance as Uhura in this one, Jessica.
She sings?
Oh, yeah, she goes, oh, wah, 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 wah. Oh,
no.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
She goes, hello, boys. I've always loved a captive audience. So, and you're also this Klingon woman who's, you're going to be with Kevin doing some acting Klingons. So it'll be good. And we got Jodie as God. I'm McCoy. Jane is a Romulan ambassador. Ashton Millard being the narrator. It's going to be great, guys. So check all that out. Coming up on Friday, December 16th, will be the live record, audio version to follow. And then what's the newest Locutors of Trek coming up, Davin?
That's a good question. Well, we've got a Trouble with Trivia coming up pretty soon. We'll do a audio podcast on the failures of Star Trek eventually. We think no. I had something else. You'll see when it goes up.
There's stuff the, coming down the pipe. The Lower Decks Radio Theater?
It comes out on next Wednesday, the third issue.
Oh, nice.
Okay, so we'll be able to do it after that comes out. So just check out that in the near future on Live Long and Podcast.
The Plus Jessica the, Show, we're going to call that one.
Yeah, Jessica.
Do I have to see in that one, too? Oh, my God.
Jessica plays every character except I play Boimler.
And I'll be Dracula. And it'll be good.
And Dave plays Dracula. Yeah. Jessica is everyone else.
Also, in the United Federation of Podcasts, we got some great ones. Most notably, tomorrow, the Simpsons podcast debuts, KBBBL. The extra L is for bring your own BB. So check that.
I think you messed that up, but you get the point.
Yes, I get the point. So,
It's gonna be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so can't wait. A lot of excited people for the Simpsons podcast. Plus,
it's
hold
gonna
up
be a lot of laughs. Guaranteed.
The movie podcast and with that Davin and Murphy.
Environmentalism coming up as the theme next Wednesday.
Yeah. Are you doing Kieran Gully?
You want to? No, I'm saving that. I almost put
Ferngully
it in
there, and Avatar
it for the animation episode.
I was going to say Ferngully and Avatar are the same movie, so
yeah, but Ferngully's good.
That is true.
Avatar is not, because Ferngully's got good music.
And what's going on with the X-rated podcast?
Big news coming out of X-rated. I just got confirmation today that we'll be having an interview with Storm.
Whoa.
So yeah, that's gonna be fun.
Wow, very impressive.
Yes.
Seen do you watch AEW at all, wrestling?
No.
There's a woman, Jade Cargill.
Oh, I know her though.
Oh yeah, she dresses as Storm.
Because my co-host
amazing.
My co-host is a professional wrestler, so I made a post one time and I was just like, dude, is this our spirit animal? Because I love Storm and he's a professional wrestler.
Was there two voices of Storm on X-Men? Did two different people do the voice?
Well, the one that matters is Allison Seeley Smith, who we're gonna be interviewing. But there was a whole
the original one's Iona Morris.
And there was one even before that.
Oh, okay.
Oh wow, I didn't even realize.
So first, they had casted white actress to play the character, but then somebody higher up thought better of that.
Good.
So then they hired a black actress from America, but then they realized because she's from the US, they'd have to pay her royalties for like forever, which you don't have to do with Canadian actresses. So they casted a bunch of Canadians.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's
get around the union dues. And what's going on with the Graphics History podcast with Andre Mayette?
Well, next up is Jason Liu, comic writer. for Chapter House and Marvel and other things. I mean, he might show up on X-Rated as well. So lots of stuff going on over in the comics division.
Oh, yeah. Also, check out Super Mater Brothers podcast.
We are brothers!
Storm, Sam. I'm going to forget you ever said that.
Super Mario podcast and cover right now Survivor 43. We're nearing the end of that season. Also, Big Brother in the horizon. So check that out. Lots of cool things going on with Super Mario Bros. Podcasting. And last but not least, the newest member, official member of the United Federation of Podcasts, the Hellbound Podcast, with Michael Chan and Alex Blackburn.
I just crashed their latest episode, so I'll be on there.
Often Jessica Chan as well. Yeah, check that out.
I'm on there for the newest one coming, so
absolutely.
And you can hear Mike and I bicker over trying to recap a plot of a movie.
Yes, well, I will. And also look forward to this Sunday, Trivial Debates, Sunday, November 27th at 8 p.m. We have Davin Skelhorn hosting a music-themed episode with Chris Seymour, Jameel Robinson, and Ryland Forsyth competing.
Champion Chris Seymour. He's got some challengers. I don't know how it's going to go. I've got the answers. It's going to be an interesting debate.
Yeah. I already know the answers, and I'm very interested. Mm-hmm. I put on Chris's wild card answer today for Jane. Mm-hmm. What's the best fictional musician? And she was like, can we turn this off? No, I was like, I'm a little bit hypnotized by this. So I was, I thought it was very interesting. I think we're in for a treat on Sunday night. So make sure to check that out. All right. Well, Jameel coming in just to say something.
Duh.
I heard my name.
Yes. We were plugging Trivial Debates.
So it's going to be invoked
Jameel.
A big butt whipping happening. Ooh, I'm looking to inflict some major damage on these folks. I think some people forgot how good I am at this game, and I'm going to show them.
Who could forget that, Jameel?
Remind them, Jameel.
First time I went up against Jameel, I was like, why am I even here? I'm going to lose so bad.
So
I thought that Ryland's answers are some interesting ones, but... yeah, it's
Devin,
gonna be good.
We've talked about this already. I think there was a little hoster interference, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, I think you need to get a new music answer. Devin told me so. You got to pick another instrument.
It's all part of the strat. I already told him. Yeah. It's all part of the strat.
Yeah, right. It's true.
Yeah, he didn't want
doesn't
his first
want anyone
choice.
To know. He doesn't trust me. He thinks I'm going to tell everyone.
Jameel will win.
I will not deny your allegations.
Jessica, I know you're going to love my TV answer.
What's the question?
TV one? What TV theme?
Theme best encapsulates show.
Ooh.
Is
it Veronica Mars? Tell me it's Veronica Mars.
It's not Veronica Mars.
I would say that the favorite in that round is not Jameel.
It is me.
It's definitely not
There's some good answers. There's some good answers.
I'm trying to think of what you're...
But I'm gonna pull as many of these...
What was your answer, Beach?
I'm going to try to pull as many of these musically in advance. So even if we've never heard it before, we'll be able to hear a little sample on Sunday. So because like what Seymour picked, everybody's going to know that.
So... I'm going to give you the first line of it, Jessica, and you'll automatically know. Way back in days of old.
Yes!
Thank you. It's okay. A done deal,
hands
Dave.
Down.
It's you a done win. Deal.
Yes, absolutely. Best, 100%, yes. Jameel wins. Yep. I'm going to be sick. No.
You think Jessica's not judged? She doesn't even need to hear the other debates.
No, I don't know. That I don't care. That wins, hands down.
Well,
also,
Chris
now you're
picked...
Jameel. Dang it!
Chris Seymour picked I'll Be There For You by the Rembrandts, probably.
No, that would have lost.
No, he didn't. No, he picked something more on brand for him, which I think will work well for him. So it's good. His wild card question, forget it. Like it has already broken my brain.
I will just say right now.
I have to admit, Jameel, I've never heard of the show you picked.
Jameel doesn't win. One, you need to watch it immediately, and two, if Jameel doesn't win, you're wrong. I'm sorry. This is not.
He's gonna have to convince me. I've never
unless
heard
you're like,
you're wrong.
Jamil, you did not do a good enough job defending the greatness of this show.
You need to. If anyone who listens, everyone needs to watch the show. By the way, it's the best, most underrated, amazing show. So good. Talking about musicals. I will start a podcast about that freaking show.
All right.
If his debate's going badly, Jessica, just jump on the feed and take over.
out of the way. You guys don't understand.
You're going to pull a me and then right after the show is over, just berate the competitor.
There's so many. Okay, just look up Dragon Pal and me and then tell
don't
me.
Don't give hints so they can prepare.
Don't worry. Seymour and Ryland
heard of this show,
right,
Jamil. Don't worry about it.
That is a crime.
You have no risk of Ryland. Well, maybe Ryland. I don't know him well enough, but there's no way Seymour's watching this right now, scouting this out. Don't worry. So,
Rye's not either.
It doesn't matter. They can't prepare. That show is amazing, and anything they say about it is wrong. So.
All right, well, let's get out of here for tonight, guys. Thanks for being with us for this review of Star Trek Prodigy Season 1, Episode 15, Masquerade. And in honor of the character that showed back up, now Admiral Jellicoe, I think we'll go out on this classic clip from his original appearance in Star Trek The Next Generation.
Let's drop the ranks for a moment. I don't like you. I think you're insubordinate, arrogant, willful, and I don't think you're a particularly good first officer. But you are also the best pilot on the ship.
Well, now that the ranks are dropped, Captain, I don't like you either. You are arrogant and closed-minded. You need to control everything and everyone. You don't provide an atmosphere of trust, and you don't inspire these people to go out of their way for you. You've got everybody wound up so tight, there's no joy in anything. I don't think you're a particularly good captain.
Yeah, well, he still made it to Admiral.
He started on four shifts.
All right, is there a problem with Delta Shift? All right, we'll see you next time, everybody. Live long and podcast. Happy Thanksgiving, Americans. Take care.
Happy Thursday. Bye.